the Speaker Laney on the floor a minute ago. Somebody was walking along, they actually caught us.
That's great. Okay, let's just start by having you say your name, the district you represented, sort of the area that the district is a part of, and the years that you served.
Robert Eccles, I represented District 133 from Harris County. It's essentially the west and south part of the county, Galleria, up through Briargrove Park and West Chase, kind of the Houston Baptist University, that Sharpstown, southwest Houston area.
Paul Colbert, I also represented Houston. It started out as District 80 when I was elected, and then after redistricting became District 132. It was south central, southwest Houston. I had the medical center at Rice University. As I used to tell people, the Astrodome was the geographic and spiritual center of my district.
And we were there. I was there in 1983, 82, 81, I guess, was redistricting. I elected 82, took office 83 through 95.
And so y'all had a lot of overlap.
Yeah, overlap.
We had 10 years of overlap. I was elected in 80, took office in 81, and January of 93, that, you know, first 10 days or so was my last time in the House.
Great. Can y'all tell me a little bit about the issues that Harris County faced during that time period?
Harris County.
We had the same issues that we've always had. Harris County and the state. And interestingly here, you look at it, it's very similar. We had oil prices at $7 or $8 a barrel, and we just thought if oil would get to $25 a barrel, we could balance the budget. We had education issues, criminal justice reform, transportation, gas tax. During that period that I was here, we raised the gas tax once. Many of the same issues that you've got today.
We had oil at $30 a barrel in 1985, and then in December of 85, it went from $30 to $9 a barrel in about 1 week's time. And we were back in 86 in a special session trying to figure out how to balance a budget that didn't have enough revenue coming in to be able to pay for everything. And then we were back again for the regular session in 87, having still to deal with the fallout of that. And we passed, you know, major tax bills, and we did smoke and mirrors. We invented a number of the smoke and mirrors things that they're using again now. And we did a lot of cutting.
We thought those were temporary smoke and mirrors at the time.
They're
now permanent smoke and mirrors.
No, you use them, and then you pay them off and recharge them. You know, the delay of the payment to the school districts from August until September of the next budget. We've used that several times now, payments to the pension systems, all those different things. We had to use all of those because the budget crash in 86 was actually, as a percentage of the state's revenue, was a bigger crash than the one that state faced either in 2003 or in 2011. So wow. We had to dig out of a really big hole.
Mm-hmm. It is interesting when you look at the pension issue in Harris County, City of Houston today with our pension issue. One of the bills I had was dealing with an unfunded liability for police in their benefits proposal, at least. And the problem was an $80 million problem. It was unfunded sick leave or unlimited accumulation of sick leave. We passed that bill, and it was a big fight with the police. And, you know, there were some trade-offs with arbitration and some of the civil service issues. But it doesn't seem to go away. You've still got the employee relations and the issues coming up with the pension now, and it's still a big issue here, and it's gone from being an $80 million issue to a multi-billion dollar issue. And there's still a question of the wisdom of having it here at all. But it continues to dominate a lot of the discussion in Austin, those local issues that deal with the big urban counties, Houston, City of Houston, and Harris County.
And, of course, the big issue that we dealt with a lot of times while we were both here was school finance, and that one still hasn't gone away. I wrote the House and the Senate versions of the finance section of House Bill 72 in 84. And then we were still, after that, the Edgewood lawsuit came along, and we redid stuff in 1990 and 1991 and so on, and we're still trying to... I'm still trying to get them to do school finance.
You told them if we got somebody good to write that bill, we wouldn't have those problems today.
My problem is I wrote it good, and then we had to compromise everything.
Yeah, it's
down
always the committee process.
Right. So with the committee process or just the process in general, what sort of strategies or maybe any advice you would have for a member on how to get a bill through the process?
It was different because... When I came in, there were 35 Republicans, I think, in the House when I got elected. So it was a different politics, mm-hmm. but it was much less partisan. It was more more of a collegial atmosphere, I guess. We'd argue with him. And Paul and I were on politically opposite sides of the spectrum, probably. But we found a way to be friends and work together and make things happen, and largely voted together on most issues.
Yeah, we weren't that far on opposite sides. I'm the worst. I also drew redistricting maps for the House in 81 and in 91. And the worst gerrymander that I ever drew in 1991 was you had Ashley Smith being way short on population with Deborah Danberg right next to him, and so he either had to move into Democratic territory, which could have beaten him, or he had to move west. But then you had Dalton Smith right here, you had Robert right here, you had John Culberson right here, and you had Talmadge Heflin right here, and I could have drawn a compact and contiguous district with all five of them in it.
Compared us all together.
All five, with five House members in it, I could have drawn that district. And in order to, as a Democrat, in order to not pair five Republican House members, and you also had Sylvester Turner's district going this way, I had to take Ashley and spiral him around Sylvester's district, and then I had to take Dalton and spiral him around Ashley's district, and then take you west and Culberson even farther west and Talmadge south. I mean, I had to draw these awful looking maps in order to not pair Republican members.
And our Republican alternative that I drew had us all paired, and we got voted down. So the gerrymandering works both ways. It's just who's drawing the maps, and we had the same complaints today that the Democrats have, or we had the same complaints then on the Republican side that the Democrats make now about the maps. It's
right.
The nature of the beast.
I gave every one of you a district, except we had to lose one district because we were going from 26 members down to 25, and everyone unanimously voted that Randy Pennington was the person they most wanted to eliminate.
They paired him with.
Yeah, so I paired him with Dan Shelley, who was a freshman member, but it was like 15% Pennington's district and about 60% Dan's district or something like that.
Well, so, that's the personalities as opposed to the politics.
Right.
Yeah. Well, the fact that Randy had contributed large amounts of money to a number of our opponents didn't endear him to the delegation either.
So. Right. So how did the House change you? How did being a member sort of impact your career later on, or just change how you think? Or
I was very young. I was 25, I guess, when I took office, 24 when I got during the campaign.
I thought you were 7.
Yeah, something like that. I remember walking up to the door of the Capitol. I was telling the story earlier of the West End of the Capitol. I was walking up to the door on the West End, a new freshman member. I have my little box of stuff that you bring in to put in the office. And I'm at the door, and I'm pulling and pushing and trying to figure out how to open the door. And this really young girl, short girl, short in the blue, the sergeant, coming up to the door, and I said, "How do you open the door?" And she reached over and turned the knob. And it kind of put me in my place about learning the process, figuring out what to do here.
My first office,
at the time, the Capitol, we were all in the Capitol building, and I shared an office with Mike Toomey. He and I were from adjoining districts on the west side of Houston. And we had an office in what is now at the time was next door to the old post office. And the whole office was about 12 feet wide, and we had five or six staff members. Two of us had an office that was smaller than this conference table. That was my office that I was in at the time. And it worked out. A guy named Jack Peterson was working with me. He'd done all the technical services and was close to the speaker, and he kind of had a really good staff that understood the process and the people involved. And it was just developing relationships, and I guess, like I said, I grew up in the house. House broken, as we used to talk about, guys getting house broken and move on to bigger and better things. But it was how to work together with folks and compromise. And there was a lot more of that, I think. We didn't have the social media that you have today. There was press and there's people watching us, but you could go home when you had a vote and explain it to your constituents. I could get my Republican precinct chairman together, talk about why we did what we did and how that worked. And I'm not dealing with 1,000 emails from all over the state of people blasted my constituents telling them why we did a bad vote or something. And I never lost an election in the 12 years I was here because we had a good relationship with the people in my district.
We also had the equal time and public service requirements, and so we were given free TV time. And when you were running for office, every time there would be panels of all of the candidates running for that seat, on TV. I'd get six or seven different free TV appearances every election, which of course doesn't happen any longer. I started out, I was already housebroken when I got to the House. I worked for a group of House members during the Constitutional Convention, and then for another House member in the legislative session in 75, and ended up as an advisor to Governor Briscoe on school finance that year. And then in 76, I became research director of the Senate Education Committee, and I did that for 5 years until I got elected to the House. So for me, it was already a little bit familiar, although the sociology of the House is very different from the Senate, and I had been on the Senate side for 5 years, so I had to learn the differences of how things operated. But I think the main lesson is that you learn it's very different to sit in that seat and have to cast those votes as opposed to being on the outside trying to say, well, why didn't you just do this? Because really what you learn here is that if you learn the job properly, the proper role of government is to find a legitimate balance between legitimate competing interests. And there's not the right answer to that, there's a right answer to that, and it's the best you can do at that particular time. And it's either that or you go back to having duels in the backyard. And this is a better way of doing those sorts of things.
Yeah, I used to enjoy, I first got in and said, I'm gonna read every bill. And I started reading every bill. And then I moved to reading every caption. Right. And then I got to where I just read the author's name and could pretty much know what I was gonna do. And it you get to be the people that you know, and depending on the you can trust people on their elections. And Paul and I would sit there and with others, they'd say, you know, this is a bill coming up that you gotta vote against because your district, and you could trust each other, and nobody was trying to pull the wool over your eyes. And and in the end, I felt like I could say that I never cast a bad vote. That if you look back, whether it was in this job in the legislature, and I think this helped me as I was county judge to look back, I can look back and see things that I might have voted on differently if I was looking at it today. You know, hindsight is 20/20. But I can honestly say that every vote I made when I was on the floor of the House making a vote or in a committee making a vote, that it was the right vote at the time for the right reason based on what I knew at the time. That I didn't feel bad about anything when I made that vote. And you wonder sometimes people get up here and, you know, the reasons they do things. And, you got to be doing the right thing for the right reason. And I always felt like that was one of the things I learned up here, was that you don't second-guess yourself going through. And
and you don't second-guess the other members necessarily either. I mean, one of the things that I had to do when I put together the school finance section of House Bill 72, the big education reform bill, was, first of all, I had to put that together. And we had to structure it in a manner that accomplished the policy goals we were trying to do, but we also had to be able to count not just to 76, but you needed to count to probably about 85 or 90 to be on the safe side. And once we had the votes assured, we had enough people who were signed on to vote for the bill, then Gib Lewis, who was the speaker at the time, Gib sent me around to the other members telling them, here's what the bill does to your district. We understand if you need to vote against it. And I guess my favorite story of that was we had a freshman member by the name of Mike McKinney, who subsequently became the Commissioner of Health and Human Services and the Chancellor at Texas A&M. But anyway, Mike, he was up there. It was his first session. We were there in the special session voting on this thing. And many of his school districts did really well under the changes we were making. But the school district that was his hometown, where he was the town doctor and where his wife ran the cafe at the only intersection in town, got hurt by the bill. And I went to him and I explained to him, Mike, you know, this is what it's going to do to your district. You know, and a lot of your districts are going to do well, but this is what it's going to do to your hometown. So, you know, if you vote the way you feel you need to vote. And he said, is it the right thing to do? And I said, I wouldn't be asking people to vote for it if it wasn't the right thing to do. He said, well, then I may only serve one session up here, but at least I'll have done the right thing. And he ended up voting for it anyway. And then I taught him how to do a big voter registration drive so he could get reelected. And he got reelected like by like 20-something votes the next election. But he was willing to put doing the right thing ahead of having a political future. And that to me was quite a moment. So.
Wow. Yeah.
It was interesting, too, you talk about the legislative process and going around talking to people. Most of the bills that I filed were diversionary tactics, because you look and the bill didn't become law, but the content became law. Mm-hmm. So it was mostly learned about amendments, and I became pretty well known for mumbling through amendments. People didn't understand, you know, what the amendment was actually about. And so, but we were successful in passing it. And one of my favorite stories was Charlie Evans was chairman of the Calendars Committee, and one of my bills was sitting in the calendars committee, languishing. We passed the Senate, and it was on the House calendar waiting to go, and it's the end of the session where you've got that calendar that's 30 pages long, and we just don't have time to it. And Charlie finally put it on at the end of the session, and we had worked our way through until we had gotten to the end, and my bill had died. And Charlie said, "I'm sorry, Robert, we just couldn't quite get to that one in time." I said, "That's okay, Charlie. I already got Farabee to put it on over in the Senate. We've had a record vote over here. The governor signed it. It's already law, and you voted for it. I appreciate it." And he thought that was pretty cool that I've been able to pull that on. But that, we just did that. My first session, I had a bill that was, I think, 8 pages long that was trying. It was really the first thing I really cared about. And we brought the Sierra Club together. This is, you asked earlier about lessons learned. We brought the Sierra Club and the developers and the community. It was about water quality in Lake Houston. It was one of the issues we had for the city, the high fecal chloroform levels in the lake from the sewage treatment plants and the solution. And it was the first time I'd ever dealt with a state agency, and I'd invited somebody from the Water Commission to come over and talk to me about what it was. And I was in this conference room with 8 people, and I was like, I didn't know anybody really cared what we thought. It was like, who's running the agency? And it turned out that we needed more inspectors for the agency. And so the only way to get more inspectors, we had no money, so we had to come up with a fee structure of some kind. We came up with a fee structure. And we wound up passing it. Harry Whitworth was the chairman of the Chemical Council, and they were fighting us because the Chemical Council, it turned out, their plants had a zero discharge permit. And we charged, I think, a $2,000 fee or something. They didn't care about that. But he said, in 10 years, this is going to be a $25,000 fee. I said, we would never do that to you, Harry. But we passed the bill, got it out of the House eventually, got it over to the Senate. It's languishing in the Senate. And I don't remember who, one of the senators over there, it became the omnibus water bill. It came back 80 pages long, and I was creating levy improvement just because it said water. It was wastewater, but it said water in the title. We amended the Bond Procedures Act. It was a much looser germaneness question at the time, and I wanted to.
The Senate, it was always loose germane.
Yeah.
So.
But, and they couldn't even write opinions on the. But the secret was that 2 years later, it was a recodification, so nobody cared. It was no longer a controversial issue, and so right. It just passed. But that came back. So true to form, I learned about the amendment process, and I got my bill done. I got the water quality for the Lake Houston that I wanted to do. The developers and the Sierra Club were together. I was back here 10 or 12 years later. I was up here for some other meeting, and I was out of the legislature at the time, but I remember looking at the calendar, and sure enough, they had an agenda item or on the calendar, a vote to raise that fee to $25,000. Harry was right. So
never do that.
You pick up a lot of institutional history here after a while. The guys that have been around, it is not a new issue. You always think everything is new, but they come back.
I look at the calendar today, and it looks like the calendars that were there when we were here.
Well, I guess just one final question is, if you had, or maybe better, yeah, have any advice for freshman members?
When you're coming up here, I think people run for the right reasons, and they get up here. In the end of it all, the only person who has to live with this is you, your vote. You gotta, to the point about McKinney and up there at the end, mm-hmm. You vote your conscience and do what you think is right, because at the end you've got to feel good about it 20 years from now. We're all going to be former members one day, and you need to decide if you're going to be a distinguished former member or a formerly distinguished member. And that's kind of the
formerly honorable.
Yeah, formerly honorable, as Gibb used to say. It's a... just enjoy it and do what you need to do. It's a different world, though, today with the social media, and it's a much faster pace, probably, than it was when we were here as far as the you deal in. So it's just different dealing with your constituents. And I still, I don't know, politics to me is, it doesn't matter if you're in the legislature, you're at the PTA or the church, the politics at home can be in the little homeowners association can be worse than the politics up here running for the legislature. So just you got to do what you think is right and feel good about it when you go home.
Well, the other thing that I would add is, again, we were talking about finding that right balance of things is understanding that the most frequently passed law in the legislative process is the law of unintended consequences. And so you really need to make sure that you understand what the people impact is of the things you vote on, and that's true for the laws, and that's true for the budget process. In the budget process, those numbers are not numbers on a page, those are people's lives. And it's not just a, well, I can just pull an arbitrary number out of out of the hat, and that's fine because, you know, people will live with it. People will also die with that sometimes. And so you really need to understand what the people impact is. We're seeing that right now with all the stuff with respect to Child Protective Services. But it's true with a number of the healthcare decisions. It's true with respect to public education as to whether or not you're going to have the educated workforce you need for the future of the state. Understand what the people impact is of the votes that you make, and make sure that you are comfortable of not just would I do this to somebody else, but would I be comfortable with somebody doing that to me or to my family, and vote for all of the people and not just for the narrow slot of people you represent.
Yeah, it's both sides of that. It's, you know, everybody's paying and everybody's getting, and it's how big a pie you make and how you divide it up in the end, and that's constant tension, and the tension is healthy. That's the give and take that goes into the process.
Well, the other tension is you are elected as a representative of your district, but you are elected as a legislator of the state of Texas, and so you pass laws that are for the entire state, and sometimes one of those hats and the other hat are in conflict, and you have to decide, like Mike McKinney did, what's the right hat to be putting on.
Great. Well, thanks. Thank y'all so much.
Sure.
That was wonderful.
It's fun that y'all are putting this together.